Hello, you're very welcome to Inside the Studio. This is episode 5 today, recorded on the 19th of February 2012. You're very welcome to the show. I am your host, Michael McAndrew, and lots of things to talk about today because this is kind of the wrap-up video. This is the last video on audio only for Inside the Studio. We are going to have covered all of the audio basics on today's episode. So the next episode will be going on to the video basics, how to make a video podcast. And that's going to be fun because there's so many different ways of doing it. You can spend a lot, you can spend a little, and it's a lot more complicated than audio. A lot more of a challenge to get working, really. That's going to be really fun going on to video, and I'm really, really excited about that. But a few episodes back, I think it was last episode, I was talking about how to do multiple instances of Skype on one computer, either a Mac or a PC. Because I was talking about how you can incorporate Skype into your podcast and how you can bring in guests and, you know, that kind of stuff on there. And so I decided I was going to make a quick video tutorial because on that episode, I didn't actually show you how to run multiple instances of Skype on one computer. So I was kind of feeling a little bit bad that I didn't do that. So I just put together a tutorial here, if I can get this up for you. It's just a quick video showing you how to set up multiple instances of Skype on I cover Mac and PC for this. The tricky way on the Mac, the easy way on the Mac, and the way in the PC, okay? So let's get that up.
So I'm going to show you how to run multiple instances of Skype, multiple accounts of Skype on one computer, on both Mac and Windows. So to start off, I'm going to show you how to run it on Windows. So you can see here that I've got one instance of Skype running. What you want to do is just open up your Windows Explorer and go to your local disk C, go to Program Files x86 and scroll down until you find the Skype folder and then go to the phone folder and you'll see Skype is there. What you want to do is create a shortcut. It'll tell you that it can't. Place the shortcut in this folder. So you just say OK to place it on the desktop, because that's fine. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually just going to place this shortcut in my documents folder just for this example. And I'm just going to rename it Skype. Now what you want to do, this is the shortcut, by the way, in my documents. You want to right click on that and go to the shortcut. Now you can see that this is a target because every shortcut has a location that it points to, and this is where the location is. It's phone skype.exe. That's the Skype executable file. Now at the end of this, what you want to do is do / secondary. What this will do is this will say to run a new instance of this skype.exe file. We're going to rename it to make sure that we don't get confused with the Skype instance. Double click on it. And now we've got two instances of Skype, and I can prove this to you. Here's one, and there's the other. So you can see there you've got two. Now you can do the same. You can do as many Skype instances as you want. This is just with two. For example, if you wanted to do it with three, all you have to do to get up another Skype instance is go back to your Windows Explorer, double-click Skype 2 again, and another Skype instance just pops up. Okay, so now I've got three Skype instances, and you just continue on. It's very, very easy on Windows, a little bit more difficult on the Mac, which I'll show you next. Now I'm going to show you how to install multiple instances or how to run multiple instances of Skype on a Mac. Now, if you're running Mountain Lion or Lion, Mac OS X, it's very, very easy. All you have to do is install this program called Skype Launcher. And you can just double-click, launches Skype. And If you want to run another instance of Skype, just click on it again. Runs another instance of Skype. Very, very easy, just like Windows, and a very easy application, okay, to install and everything. Now, I got this from thetechbuzz.net, and the TechBuzz is a podcasting network. They have many podcasts on the network, and he posted, Stephen over at the TechBuzz posted a while back a post on how to run multiple instances of Skype, and he also gave a link to a download. And I'm going to leave this a link in the description of this podcast. But it's thetechbuzz.net/2012/06/18/multiple-skype-accounts-on-mac-os-x-lion. So I will leave a link to that in the description for you. But it's, as you can see, very easy to run multiple instances of Skype. Now, if you are running any other version of Mac OS X that isn't Mountain Lion or Lion, it's much more difficult to run multiple instances of Skype. So you're going to have to actually do it manually. And I'm going to go through that for you now, because I had to do this with my old Skype computer. I had a computer that was running Leopard, and so it wouldn't run Skype Launcher. Skype Launcher didn't work on it. So the first thing you're going to want to do is copy Skype and paste Skype. So you're making a copy of Skype. Command-C and Command-V will do that for you. And you see it's called Skype Copy. I'm going to call this Skype B. Okay, and the next thing you want to do is go to Show Package Contents and go to the info.plist. Now, make sure that you're going to open this with text edit, okay? And then go Command F, this will do a find, and go for com and find com dot, okay? You can see here that the first one I found was com.skype.emoticonset, okay? You want to change the Skype, the first Skype, to B, okay? I hope you can see this. And then you want to hit next, the next one I found, and then change the Skype to B, and then go to the next one, and you can see it's com.skype.skype. Change the first Skype to B, and then this one is com.apple, so you don't want to change that one, just the ones that say com.skype.skype, which is here. So we're going to change that one, and this one. All right, so you just change all of them in the info.plist, okay? Now it's gone back to the top, so you want to save that. You can quit text edit, and now you've got your second instance of Skype, okay? Skype B. Now there's another thing you want to do, okay? You want to go into Terminal. And I'm going to write defaults, write com.b.skype, because that's the new identifier, the new way that we identified our new version of Skype, data path, and then we're going to say, we're going to do some quote or double quotes in here, and we're going to give it a path, okay, to store all of the files for Skype, and I'm going to put it in applications, okay? So let's do that. And now it's done. So now, just in 1 minute, you should be able to see a folder labeled Skype B pop up when you run Skype B. So let's do that now. And there's the folder. And now you've got Skype B. Okay. And we can actually run both instances of Skype right here. So you can see we've got two instances of Skype running. If you wanted to do it with three, you'd have to go and do this process again and call it Skype C, Skype D, etc. And it is a lot more painful, a lot slower process, a lot harder than on the PC. But if you're running Lion or Mountain Lion, which you should be if you have a new enough Mac, then you just use the Skype Launcher application. Very, very easy to do. Okay, so that's how to install or how to run multiple instances of Skype on PC and on Mac.
So I hope that video, that quick video there, helped you out. That will be made available on the Talks About Tech YouTube channel after this show is over. You can just go to youtube.com/talksabouttech. And you can find that video there if you wanted to watch it after the show. So, right, today I want to talk about what I was saying in previous episodes was the dreaded audio compression. So I might have overreacted a little bit there because audio compression isn't hard. It's not a hard thing to do at all. As long as you know what you're doing, as long as you know what the terminology is, as long as you understand compression and what it does, you should be fine. Okay? So we might as well get right into it. Audio compression is basically just used to keep your volume level consistent, to keep it level, to boost the low volume levels and bring down the high volume level. Okay? So this is just trying to keep your volume consistent. Okay? Trying to make it sound good so that you don't, so that viewers or listeners don't have to boost their volume if you move away from the microphone, or bring down their volume if you move closer to the microphone, right? Or if you increase the volume. This is a way of compensating for that. And really, it's just a way to make your life easier, okay? Now, there are a number of different controls or kind of, there's a number of different terms that are used in compression to set the compression levels, to set like things on the compressor, right? So for lack of a better word, I apologize, but there's lots of different terms, okay? So threshold is the first one. Threshold is the volume level where that the audio level must reach. So the audio comes into a compressor. If you think of a compressor, okay? A compressor is like a device, okay? And, or software. So it gets an audio input signal, whether it be your voice, whether it be a musical instrument or something like that, because compression is not just used for voices. Compression is used for anything, any type of sound input, okay? Just to keep it consistent. So the threshold is the volume of which the compressor starts to work once the audio hits that volume. So for example, if the threshold was set to 0 dB, at when the volume level, the input level, hits 0 dB, the compressor will start working. That's basically what it is. That's the threshold, okay? Start doing its work and start compressing the audio. That's what I meant. Now, the ratio. This is the amount by which the compressor compresses the audio. So for example, a ratio of 2 to 1 is if the input, the audio input is 2 decibels over that threshold. So in this case, if the threshold is set to 0 dB, 2 decibels over that is 2 dB. So if the input, the audio input, was set to 2 decibels over that threshold, it would compress it so that the output is 1 decibel over that threshold. For example, if the ratio was 4 to 1 and it's written 4:1, if the ratio or if the volume was 4 decibels over that threshold, it would the output would be 1 decibel over the threshold. See, I used to think that it was for every 2 decibels over, it decreases it by 1 decibel, but actually, it isn't. If it's a 2 to 1 ratio, it isn't. Okay. Because as you go further up on the ratios, it changes, right? So that's not what it is, okay? The attack time and release times. The attack time is the time. So let's say the audio goes over that threshold, okay? The attack time is the time it takes for the audio for the compressor to start compressing the audio once it goes over to the threshold. So for example, if the threshold or if the attack time was 400 milliseconds, basically what would happen is if the audio went over that threshold, it would take 400 milliseconds for the compressor to kick in and start compressing that audio once it went over the threshold. Okay, so you can probably guess what the release time is. The release time is actually very similar to the attack, except
Once it's the opposite of an attack. So once the audio goes below the threshold, how much time does it take for that audio to stop being compressed by the compressor? So, for example, again, a time of 400 milliseconds, maybe. Normally, the release time is a little bit longer than the attack time. So, what does a short or a long attack time mean, or release time mean? Well, the longer the attack and the release times, the more natural sounding it's going to be. Okay? If you're having a very short attack and release time, then your audio is going to sound a lot more kind of controlled. It's going to have a lot more of a radio sound. And what happens is you lose dynamic range. So dynamic range, if you think of an audio waveform, and an audio waveform, as the volume gets louder, the waveform gets larger. And if the volume is quieter, then the volume gets lower. Okay, and hence you can see the volume in that waveform. Okay, a normal waveform will vary a lot. So you'll have a lot of low points in the waveform and high points in the waveform as the audio volume gets lower and higher. And this creates dynamic range. So a large dynamic range is, in an audio file, is a file that has a lot of very low sounds. So let's say up to minus 20 dB and very high sounds up to 0 dB, okay? So typically in music, if you're trying to create a mellowness or a harshness, you're going to increase or decrease the volume level, okay? But a compressed audio file will just look like a line, straight line. If you zoom it out, just like look like a straight line, because the volume is at the same level all the time, even if you're speaking quieter or louder. Okay, so this loses the dynamic range. Sometimes you want to keep that dynamic range. If it's music, you do. Voice, not so important. Not so important. So you can have a higher, or you can have a lower attack time and release time. If you're messing around with vocals, again, if you're recording vocals, as in vocals for music, and the vocalist is trying to create that kind of sound where they sing quieter or louder, right, to create mellowness or harshness, then you might want to use less compression. So that's what the attack time and the release time in. In a very long, winded explanation is. Okay, now we're going to go into the knee. So the knee is either hard or soft. It's how the audio is compressed. Either a very harsh, like a very strict compression, or a very soft, sharp or soft compression. Pretty straightforward. Some compressors actually don't have a knee, which is kind of interesting. I've seen compressors that don't have a knee, and you will find compressors that won't have all of these features that I'm talking about, or any of these terms, but some will, okay? So it depends on the compressor, because you can get so many different types of compressors. And then you've got the output. Now, the output is the volume level in which the audio was output, right? So you've got an input volume and an output volume. The input volume could be much lower or much higher than the output volume, okay? So you can set the output volume. If you set the output volume to 0 dB, that matches the input volume. It's pretty straightforward, okay? Zero is normally kind of right there. 0 dB. It's kind of funny how 0 dB is kind of the place you want to be. You think that 0 dB would be the place that the audio starts, right? But it actually doesn't. The audio can go down to like minus 144 dB. All right, that's the lowest I've seen, but it can go down and down and down and down, right? But the ideal you want to hit is 0 dB all the time, which is what I'm trying to do in my podcast, so I can get the most volume out of my audio, so it's not really low and people have to absolutely crank the volume on their laptops or on their computers or whatever they're listening to it. To listen to the podcast, sorry. Right, so audio compression comes in very handy there to try to make sure that the audio hits 0 dB but won't go over 0 dB and distort. Okay, so I hope this is kind of making you understand a little bit more why you want to use a compressor. Because compressors just really, really help out with your sound. I'm using a compressor and a limiter on my audio here. And I'll explain what a limiter is too. What I always strive for to do is hit that 0 dB audio level on my mixer and hit it on my compressor. And if it starts to go over that, I start compressing it so that it will not go over 0 dB. That's basically what I'm doing. And it makes a huge difference to the sound. Radio stations use compressors extensively because they want to... It's a little bit different in radio. In podcasting, you don't really mind. Like, as a podcaster, I'm very much aware of the volume level. For example, when I started off podcasting, my volume levels were quite low. So if I was listening to a YouTube video, I set the computer to one level. But if I started listening to my podcast, I'd have to boost the volume level on the computer because I didn't really have any concept of volume levels. I was recording really low or really high. So now I have more of a concept of volume levels. I want to make sure that if someone's listening to any video on YouTube, that they don't have to touch their volume on their whatever device they're using to listen to the podcast. They shouldn't have to move the volume to listen to my podcast at an acceptable level, okay? So 0 dB is really... I actually leave it at a little bit less, -2 to -3 dB, so that I have a little bit of headroom there, because I don't want to really highly compress it. It's not really what I'm striving for. But that's what volume level. That's why I'm so kind of obsessive about volume level. I want to make sure that the volume level is right. Now, you can set this on your whatever video editing or audio editing software you're using. Audacity, you can put gain on it, so you can increase the audio level so that it's right there. So it's not quite distorting, but it's not too low. You have to get the ideal, and that's very difficult to do. It's taken me quite a long time to try and get it, and I'm still tweaking and trying to get the ideal audio level, you know? So now I'm going to talk to you about the different types of compressors. You've got your good old-fashioned hardware compressors, which I use. Now, what these basically do is they take an audio input, be it my microphone in this case, and it goes through the compressor and it comes out as an audio output. Okay? Now, these hardware compressors are normally coupled with a gate, which is a very, very handy piece of gear to have, and they're also coupled with a limiter. My compressor is also a limiter and a gate. Okay, so we'll start off with. So I've explained what the compressor is. I'll try and explain what a gate is and a limiter. A gate is something. A noise gate is basically used to reduce the background noise of an audio signal. You can set the threshold of the gate, so the volume, of course, in which the gate kicks in. Basically, what it does is, if the audio volume hits that a threshold, be it -25 dB, we'll say, okay, it's going to mute the audio at zero, -25 dB. If it goes over the threshold, which is over -25 dB, then it's going to unmute the audio, okay? So when you speak, it unmutes the audio, and when you stop speaking, it mutes the audio. So let's say you had a computer running in your studio. Well, and you didn't really, if you stopped speaking, you didn't really want that computer noise to get through. Then what you want to do is use a gate. So when you're speaking, it just hears your voice. That computer will still be in the background when you're speaking, of course, but your voice will be overpowering it. So you won't be able to hear that computer. And then when you stop speaking, mutes the audio and you don't get any of the background noise, hence the computer and stuff like that, right? So, and that's what I do. I have computers running in my studio, but you probably can't realize it. Now, I have got a new computer, which isn't as loud as my old computer. I'm very happy with my new computer. It's not half as loud as my old computer. But I had some very serious audio issues where my computer would just be really, really loud. I mean, the fans were just incredibly loud on that old computer that I had. And so the problem was I was getting into my audio sound on my podcast, and it sounded terrible. So after I got the Gate, it improved it dramatically. You can't tell that I'm running computers in the background. Now, something that the Gate does not address is echo. So this room is actually quite a dead room, sound-wise. I do a lot of audio recording in here, but you probably wouldn't want to record it in a place with a very large hall or something with a huge echo. Like, this room is relatively sound dead, but yet I still get a little bit of an echo. It's very hard to get complete dead sound. I think having a little bit of echo actually just adds a little bit of character to the sound. You don't want to have completely dead. You want to have a little bit of reverb in there. Even though you're striving for the, like, okay, I'm gonna do a test here. Wow. See, I've been messing around with effects on my mixer recently, so you might be able to hear I'm putting in a little bit more reverb. That doesn't really suit a podcast. You want to get the cleanest sound you possibly can. So it's quite fun actually messing around with that. But this room does have a little bit of an echo in it. But I think it's fine. But that's something that the Gate will not address, okay? And as I said, it's also coupled with, so a Gate, a compressor, and a limiter. So a limiter is like a really, really kind of a harsh compressor. Basically what it does is you set the threshold on the limiter as well, and this is the point where the audio will not go any further. Okay, so the audio will not go over, let's say you set the limiter to 3 dB, the audio will not go over 3 dB, just not. It will not go over plus 3 dB. Now, it might distort a lot depending on how much over the 3 dB your audio is actually going. But generally, the limiter is actually pretty good. It doesn't sound that bad if you hit the limiter, but depends on how loud you're actually going. Ideally, your compressor should be able to take care of it all before you hit the limiter. The limiter is kind of like the last resort type thing. If something really loud comes on, it'll hit the limiter just to prevent from blowing speakers or blowing anything, you know, blowing, you know, your headphones or whatever audio thing you're using to listen to the podcast. So that's what a limiter does. Now, a limiter I don't find to be necessary in a podcast. If you're doing live, like audio, like music, like a concert, limiters are pretty necessary because you could blow speaker banks. I mean, that's pretty serious, you know? So you'd want to have a limiter there. But for podcasting, you don't really need to set a limiter. Right. So I hope that made sense so far, okay? What a hardware compressor is, and why it's usually coupled with a Gate and a limiter. That's actually really nice that it's like a 3-in-1, because they're kind of the three dynamics processing tools that are most common that you'd want to use, okay? Now I can tell you what compressor I'm using, what compressor limiter gate I'm using. I'm using a Behringer MDX 4600 Multicom Pro XL. Really great compressor limiter gate. I can't recommend it enough, okay? And I'll have a quick video on me setting my levels on using this compressor limiter gate just a little bit later on in this episode. So, right, now I'm going to go on and talk about software compressors. Yes, that's right. There is a software version of a compressor. It's also a software version of a gate and a limiter. So if you use a program such as Audacity, which I covered on a previous episode, or Adobe Audition, which I use myself, that's a little bit more expensive. Adobe Audition, I talked about that on a previous episode too. Then You may be familiar with a software compressor, a software gate, or a software limiter. You might have messed around with them. GarageBand actually also uses GarageBand on the Mac. It's this free software that comes on every Mac. And they work actually exactly the same as a hardware compressor, except they're not real time. So the only way you can use, not the only way, but the recommended way that you can use a software compressor is you record your audio uncompressed, and then you bring it into your audio editing software and you compress it. Okay? So there are disadvantages and advantages to this. The advantages to this is you can record your audio uncompressed, of course, send it into your audio editing software, and you can fine tweak the compression. So you don't have that luxury if you're compressing it live to tweak the compression as you go along. You set the compression before the show starts and you hope that it's going to work. Of course, you can do tests, but as the show goes on, the audio might change. So it's very difficult if you're a one man band like me to be adjusting compression settings. I have done it, by the way, in previous episodes, to be adjusting compression levels as you're going along on the fly. Whereas when you're doing it in post, you can do that. You know, that's probably the biggest advantage. You can adjust the level, the amount of compression you want, the level of the compression, the output level. You can just keep adjusting that and fine tweaking it. Now, what are the disadvantages? Well, one of the biggest and coolest things about compression is if I shout really, really loud, it's not going to distort. Okay? If I'm using my hardware compressor, which is doing it live. But if you're recording uncompressed, and in the recording you shout really loud, it's going to distort, most likely. Okay? And then if you bring it into your audio or audio editing software and you use the compressor on it, it can't undistort the audio because the audio is already distorted. It's already recorded, so it can't prevent it. Okay? And that is kind of a big feature of a compressor, you know, and you're losing that big feature. But what you would use the audio compressor for in audio editing software is, again, bringing up the lower audio levels and bringing down the higher audio levels, just creating a consistent audio level. That's what you'd use a software compressor for in your audio editing application. Now, but you need to make sure that you know exactly what levels to set. You need to make sure that you understand all these levels, okay? Now, I'm going to talk about, in just a little bit, I'm going to talk about my settings. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about my settings. My settings are set for my voice, my microphone, my mixer, my equipment. Okay? Now, it may vary for you. Okay? But really what you need to do is you need to make sure that you understand each of those terms that I talked about with compression so that you understand them. And also a gate and also with a limiter. You need to make sure that you understand exactly what more or less of that effect is going to do to your audio sound. Let's take threshold, for example. If you increase the threshold, that means that the compressor is going to kick in at a louder audio level. If you decrease the threshold, that means the compressor is going to kick in at a quieter audio level. You need to make sure that you understand exactly what kind of effect each of those terms is going to do to change your audio, okay? Also, I want to address this now. A lot of people will highly compress audio, like really highly compress audio. There's a problem with that. It doesn't sound natural. I mean, it doesn't sound like your voice at all. It just sounds like a really boomy, like, I know a lot of radio stations. I'm not going to name any. There's radio stations out there, and they will boost bass, the boost compression, the boost treble, just to get this really loud, overdriven, over bassy, over trebly sound. And that's not natural because the human voice is a mid-range sound, okay? So most of what goes on in the human voice is mid-range. So if you're boosting the treble, you're boosting the bass, that doesn't sound human. It just sounds super bassy is super trebly. And it's the same at compression. The audio or the human voice can be very low, as in audio wise, can be very low sound. You could be whispering, or it could be very high. You could be shouting. Okay. And if you're using tons and tons of compression, you're completely losing that. All right. So you're kind of, it just completely loses naturalness, right? What you're used to listening to every day, which is a human voice, quieter or louder, is just going away if you use lots of compression. So what I recommend you do is use small amounts of compression, okay? So that, not a huge amount of compression, so that if you're going over that threshold, the compression will kick in and it will lower it, okay? But you don't want it so that it's just completely destroying your audio sound. You'll know yourself. You'll listen to it and you'll say, does this sound good or does this not sound good, right? Now, also what I recommend is if you're talking normally, you don't want the sound to be compressing. Because what that does is that means that the compressor is kicking in all the time, so it's just constantly compressing the sound. That's not the whole idea of a compressor. The idea of a compressor is that what you're doing is if you shout really loud or if you talk a little bit louder than you're supposed to, basically, the compressor will correct that and it'll say, that's okay, I'll bring down the volume for you again, right? It's only, you shouldn't be using it all the time because it affects the sound, right? So to get the most natural sound out of your microphone and out of your voice, this, you know, the voice is the most important thing. You want to make sure that your voice is sounding the most like what you hear yourself, right, as possible. So if you're using compression all the time, there's no way it's going to sound like that. So you want to use compression sparingly, okay? So if I start shouting really, really loudly, the compression is going to kick in. But if I'm speaking normally, there shouldn't be any compression. Okay, and most compressors will tell you if it's compressing or not. Like normally, if I speak a little bit louder, it'll kick in just slightly, like 1 dB or maybe 2 dB. Not a very huge amount of compression there. Okay, and if I shout really, really loud, then you can see the compression levels start kicking in a little bit more. But that's what I just want to say that, look, there's no point in over compressing stuff because it just doesn't sound natural. I would not recommend you do that. The same goes for gating. Now, I heavily gate. I have to be honest. I set a minus 20, minus 21 dB gate. Some people would consider that to be a lot. Others may not, okay? But I consider that to be a lot because I have so much noise. Basically, once I stop talking, gate kicks in, okay? That's probably what you want to do. But you don't want to over-gate it. And I'll actually give you an example of an over-gate. This is over-gating, so I have to shout really loud, and you can kind of, my voice is like coming in and coming out, right? So that's what you don't want, okay? That's over-gating. Again, not a natural sound, not a good sound whatsoever, right? So now my settings, I said, were minus 20 dB. What it might change, it might be different for you. Depends on your audio levels, depends on all of your gear, okay? So what you want to do is mess around with it. Don't rush into setting your compression levels. I am changing my settings on my compressor limiter gate all the time. I mightn't be happy with it, so I'll change it, right? So take your time when you're setting your compression levels and your gate levels and your limiter levels. Remember that there's no rush. Use it sparingly. It's only kind of a tool to help you so that you don't have to manually adjust the levels yourself, okay? It's by no means necessary. However, the gate is a great tool. If you just buy my compressor limiter, the one I have, for the compressor limiter gate that I have, just for the gate, it's well worth it. Just for the gate, it's well worth it. Compression is kind of something that's not necessary. But if you have a loud environment, a noisy environment with lots of background noise, gate will solve a lot of that. But what I've found is I've listened to audio and the background noise is so loud that it's coming out over the person's voice That it will not address. But if it's computer noise in the background and stuff like that, the gate will definitely really help you. I'm telling you, it will really, really help you. It's well worth it just for the gate. Just for the gate, it's well worth. I think I paid €120 for it. €140 maybe. Well worth it just for the gate. I do use compression. I do use the limiter too. But not really necessary. So, okay. Now I'm going to get on to the second video. Now, I actually haven't got this video up here. So I forgot to transfer the second video because I forgot I had a second video. Or maybe did I? I have to check now. Let me just check that for you. This is... yes, I have got the compression tutorial up here for you. Let me just turn that on for you now. I've actually completely disabled, completely bypassed... Oh, hang on. Better start that from the beginning. I've done this in so many videos so far. Where the video like starts like 20 minutes in or 20 seconds in and then I have to restart it. So
okay, guys, so I'm going to go through my compressor limiter gate setup here on my compressor limiter gate, obviously. This is the Behringer Multicom Pro XL MDX 4600. Now, I've actually completely disabled, completely bypassed my compressor limiter gate right now. And so if I press this little button right here, the in or out button, this will kick the compressor in. Now I'm going to pull up my compressor settings. So with the compression and limiting and all that nice stuff to show you the difference between when I don't use it and when I use it. Okay, so now I'm using my compressor limiter gate. And probably the biggest difference is... the gate, what the gate is doing. This is the gate knob is the one just here. That's actually just cutting out. And you can see with these levels, this is the gate level. You can see when the gate is cutting out the audio or muting the audio. And that's probably making the biggest difference because my compression levels aren't exactly the highest levels of compression. But I am heavily gating this because I have so much noise going on in the studio. I want to cut out all of that noise. Now, if we turned off this gate, you can hear that it's actually letting in a lot of noise. Okay, so let's bring the gate back in. And there you go. Now we have no noise, only when I'm talking. So that's probably going to make the biggest difference. You can also hear it just kind of adds a little bit more presence, a little bit more oomph into my sound. It also increases the volume, the sound of the volume a little bit, which is always a good thing. Now, I'm going to go through my compression settings and why I set my compressor this way. So you can see here that the threshold is set to just about -6 dB. It should really be about a little bit more than that because... You know, the knobs magically turn themselves. But about just under 0 dB is when my compressor starts coming in, okay? And I'm also compressing it at about... Let me see here. Sorry, the ratio is about... It's just a little less than 4 to 1. Should be 4 to 1. So that's really what I'm doing. And I'm leaving the output the same as the output levels that are coming in, okay? You can boost this as well. You can use this as a preamp. You can bring this right up here. And then I'm also using my peak limiter. So this is my limiter. And what this is doing is this is essentially just setting the complete threshold where this audio will go no further, which is set to very difficult to figure it out here. It's actually quite a... Let's see here. Let's see how... Sorry, that's the... let's see how far it'll go. I think it'll go to about 12 dB. 12 dB before it's, you know... So, and it doesn't actually sound bad once you hit the limiter. It just sounds a bit kind of distorted. It doesn't sound that bad when you hit the limiter. But that's my settings. And again, I'll just bypass it. So this is what it sounds like without any compression, without any limiting, without any gate, and I'm going to bring it in for you. Okay, and now this is my sound with the compression, with the limiting, and with the gate in there. So I think it makes a huge difference to my podcast, to my sound, to my audio quality. I'm constantly tweaking this, by the way. This is not, I mean, some people might look at it and they might go, what the hell is he doing? But it really works because I can really shout into the microphone, like really, really shout. And you can see here that it's not distorting whatsoever, which I find to be really, really great. This piece of equipment works really well for me. Of course, if you're using this in software such as Adobe Audition or Audacity, it's probably going to be the same knobs. It's going to be the same... the same kind of interface. It's going to have the same terminology at least. So if you understand how this compressor works, you'll probably understand how most compressors work. You may have to, they might have more knobs, they might have more options, or they may have a few less. So just look into that as well. So I hope this helped you out on how to understand compression a little bit more and what kind of compression settings I'm using. I also do a little bit of multi-band compression, but I'm trying to cut that down as much as possible because I want to get the best sound I possibly can live for my live viewers. And this has really helped me out. I mean, this gate is the most handy piece of kit. I mean, it just really, really makes a huge difference to the sound of your podcast and to the sound of your audio quality, especially if you're running as many computers as I am in my room, in my studio here. So, okay, so I hope this helped you out. Okay, so there you go. I hope that that video helped you out there. And so now the one thing that I haven't covered on compression is how do you set up a hardware compressor? How do you wire it? So I think I can switch to this. This is my behind the scenes camera right there. And there's my laptop. So you can actually see what I'm doing right now. Let me see if I can get right up here. And there you go. This is my studio right here. That's my MacBook. This is my so this is where all of the magic goes on, if you want to say. There is my compressor limiter gate, and something that you didn't see in the video is the size of this thing. This is a 4-channel compressor limiter gate. It's actually quite big, and it fits perfectly into this little slit. I didn't make this slit. It's just part of this drawer is this this little rack mount area right here. I don't think it's designed for a rack mount. But basically the wires, I've cut holes in the back of this drawer here to run cables through. And here is my mixer. This is the Behringer Zenix X2442 USB. I just love this thing. This is like just a really cool mixer. I'm really liking it. So up here, you can see I'm actually not using many of these many of these audio connection or channels here. I'm like, there's not much really being used compared to the actual amount that's on the mixer here. But okay, so let's get right into this here. So you can see actually channel one is my microphone, by the way. So this is the levels that I've got set. You can see I've got the gain set right here, really high. Because it's a dynamic microphone, the preamp needs to work really hard to boost the audio to a decent level. So that's why I have the gain set really high here. This is my XLR cable. This is coming directly into the XLR on the mixer, going from the microphone through the XLR cable, through the stand, in here to this XLR input right there. So you can see there that that's where that is. And then here, there's a second cable. This is actually the insert on my mixer.
So I talked about this on the previous episode when I was talking about insert on a mixer. I'm using an insert cable right here. And basically what it does is you can see there's actually two kind of cables running on this. It splits out to two. You can see here there's a quarter inch, right? This is a quarter inch input, okay? It splits out. Sorry, this autofocus is getting really annoying. It splits out to two quarter inches. One is the input and one is the output. So the input quarter inch goes into the input on the compressor, and then the output goes to, on the output of the compressor. So basically what it's doing is the mixer is sending, this is a stereo, okay? So on one side of the stereo channel, it's sending the audio from the microphone into the compressor, and on the other side, it's taking it back into the mixer, the compressed audio back into the mixer. So I'm actually hearing my compressed audio. So it's going directly through the mixer. This is the official way, I suppose you could say. This is the official way of setting up your compressor, setting up your limiter, and setting up your gate. If you want to wire it that way, that's probably the recommended way, is to do it that way. That's the way I've been told to do it. Some people do it different ways. They wire it directly, maybe. They use an aux send. There's many different ways, but that's kind of the way that I would recommend that you use. It's probably the most effective way. You can buy insert cables from... You could probably buy them from Maplin if you're here in Ireland. There's a few Maplin stores around the country. You could buy them online too. They're really cheap. They're just a normal cable. You know, you could pay maybe €1-2 for them. €5 max maybe. So that's the way that I've got it set up, and that's the way I've got it wired. So anyway, that kind of wraps up my compression, limiting and gate section here. So now I'm going to go on and I'm going to talk about, for the last section of this show, I'm going to talk about live streaming. I live stream this show every week, every Tuesday at 8 p.m. usually. Sometimes it's a little bit later, sometimes it's a little bit earlier, but it's usually about 8 p.m. every Tuesday. That's Greenwich Mean Time. And so I want to talk a little bit about live streaming because I haven't really covered it on the show so far. Well, live streaming is basically, if you think of TV or if you think of radio, it's usually done live, right? So the program is showed out live on the spot. So if it's a live show, let's take a show on RTE maybe, right? That show is produced and everything is done live, okay? Well, and if you think of a radio show on RTE Radio, for example, that's also done live. Well, if you think of it like this... With podcasts, you can live stream them now to the internet. So there's live streaming services that allow you to stream it live to the internet. So you can stream right, like real time, pretty much real time, small bit of lag depending on how good your internet service is. But I do that. And why would you do this? Well, for me, it's just kind of a thing of, if I was just to record this without live streaming, I would literally do loads and loads of takes. I would do maybe 5-10 takes of the show. That's a big problem because then I have to spend a load of time producing the show. I have to spend a load of time just working on post-production. So that's a big issue. So if I'm doing it live, it kind of forces me into doing it in one take. And If I'm making mistakes, right? If I'm making mistakes, I just kind of continue. it kind of forces me to continue if I'm doing it live. Can't really do multiple takes if you're doing it live. But the best thing about live streaming a podcast is it's so much more relaxed. It's so much more relaxing being a host or someone on the podcast. If you think of TV, it's really well polished. If a TV presenter makes a mistake, it's a pretty serious thing. Whereas if a podcast producer makes a mistake, it's not such a big deal. I've made so many mistakes now, and people don't seem to mind really, but they don't say anything. But that's kind of an advantage to doing a live stream on the internet as a podcast. Doesn't have to be as polished, I think.
not as such polished, but it's just a lot more relaxing experience. It's a lot easier to do. And that actually kind of helps you to be more relaxed in your podcast. And when you're relaxed and you're not nervous, that's when you create your best content, and that's when you're doing your best, is when you're relaxed. You've no fear, you've no distractions, you just go, right? So how do you live stream? Now, I'm live streaming video and audio because I do a video podcast, but you can stream audio only. Now, there are services such as Ustream.tv, Justin.tv, BitGravity, just to name a few. There's also audio-only live streaming services. So these are services that just stream audio. They don't stream video. Ustream, BitGravity, and Justin.tv all stream video as well. But I think that they're actually the best and easiest way to do a live stream. Ustream, Justin.tv, BitGravity, they're all really easy to do a live stream with. Very easy, like a couple of clicks and you're up and running. So you can also do an audio stream with these. So what you do is you just plug your mixer, you plug your audio, whatever you're using to record your audio, into your computer, and you start up, you create an account with Ustream, for example. We'll just take the Ustream for the time being. And you can actually, with Ustream, you can download a piece of software called Ustream Producer. And this is free. This allows you to take in, to add in an audio, audio and video onto your podcast. Only allows you to take in one camera, though. But let's say you didn't want to do video. Well, what you can actually do is take your podcast logo or your podcast artwork and display it on your live stream. So all the people are seeing is your podcast artwork, but they're hearing your audio. So that's one way of doing it. And you can do the same thing with Justin.tv. You can just display a black screen, but you have your audio streaming live. I've done it, and it works, no problem. That's another way you can do that. And BitGravity is the exact same way. I haven't had much experience with BitGravity, but I'm pretty sure you can do the same thing. So recently, you might be able to realize, if you're watching the live stream right now, that the live stream looks a little bit different. And that's because I used to use Ustream.tv, and I've just switched to Justin.tv right now. So I'm using a different provider. And, there's a number of reasons that I've done that. And not because I wasn't happy with Ustream. Ustream is a really great service too. There's just a number of reasons that I switched over to Justin.tv. But Justin.tv does exactly the same as Ustream. Some of them, like Ustream has its advantages and disadvantages, and Justin.tv has its advantages and disadvantages. I've seen a lot of features that Ustream doesn't have, and I've also seen a lot of features with Ustream that Justin.tv doesn't have. So, you know what? I recommend that you just look at the two of them and figure out which one is best for your production if you're looking at doing a live stream. Another advantage to doing a live stream is you can have a chat room. I've got a chat room set up on my live stream right now. If you're on the live stream and you want to join the chat room, you can just click the pop-out chat just above the live stream box, and you can click on the pop-out chat, bring you into the chat room. And I'm actually using a service called Light IRC, and this is a free service. Basically, it allows you to create any chat room. Now, it's using IRC, which is just a type of technology for just doing text chat, and you just name your IRC. You just go to lightirc.com. Name what you want the name of the chat room to be. Gives you an embed code. You can like select different colors for the chat room, like for the embed, and then you just get the embed code embedded on a web page, and you've got your chat room right up there set up. Very, very easy thing to do. And then so people who are watching or listening to the live stream can interact with you. They can have conversations amongst themselves. I kind of find that doing a show, while I'm doing a show, kind of distracts me. But normally what I do is I go live about 15 to 20 minutes before the show starts. and I'll have a chat with people in the chat room. And then after the show, I'll also have a chat with people in the chat room and talk about different things. For example, on this show, in the pre and post show, I might talk about stuff to do with podcasting. On Talks About Tech, I might actually talk about tech. I really like doing live. I really like doing live. I think I started doing live at episode 21, I want to say. So I had about 20 episodes under my belt before I looked at doing live. I've never really looked back since. I really do enjoy doing live. Now, there's a few things you may want to consider before you actually just take the plunge and go live. First of all is, does it suit the topic? Does it suit what kind of podcast I'm doing? If it's a talking head show podcast, if it's a podcast that's yourself, maybe a couple of guests talking about something, audio podcast, obviously, because I'm talking about audio podcasts on Inside the Studio so far, then that's very doable. You can live stream that very, very easily. But if you're adding in effects, if there's stuff that you're doing in post-production currently in your podcast, and you're thinking of bringing it live, it mightn't work out because live might, you mightn't be able to do some stuff live. Live can be limiting, as in I wanted to do compression and I wasn't able to do it live unless I bought a physical hardware compressor. You know, there's a lot of kind of limitations to doing stuff live, but I prefer doing it live because it actually saves me a lot of time. In the post-production. I don't want to do a lot of post-production. Also, what you want to think about is your internet. I am actually running off quite a slow internet, internet speeds, but I can actually get quite a decent decent stream out. So I'll tell you a little bit about my internet. I am using an 8 megabyte or an 8 megabit downstream. So I'm getting 8 megabits per second down, and my upload is 200 kilobits per second upload. So the upload is what's important here, because when you're live streaming, you're uploading, right? And 200 kilobits per second is not all that much. I'll give you kind of a comparison to So the average HD video that you watch on YouTube is normally about 3,000 kilobits per second, or 3,000 megabits per second. No, 3,000 kilobits per second, right? So that's quite, 3,000 kilobits per second is quite a lot more than 200. Your average standard definition video you watch on YouTube or wherever is about 1,600 to 1,000 kilobits per second. So what I'm doing is I'm streaming at 640 by 360. That's my resolution. And I'm doing it at 200 kilobits per second. If you're running audio only, that's about maybe 60, 70, maximum 128 kilobits per second to stream audio only. So that's not a lot. That's very manageable. And you don't have to have fast internet to do that. But if once you get into video, you have to kind of watch your internet speeds a bit more. Okay, so you don't really have to worry about that if you're doing audio only, though. So now these services that I was talking about for live streaming are completely free, but you can also get a paid version. So what's the difference between free and paid? Well, the free version is ad-supported, which means that there will be ads. Ads will pop up on the live stream. Either before you watch the live stream, it'll come up with like an ad that you can skip, or like a 30-second ad. Or during the show, there'll be a little pop-up ad that'll come up on the bottom. Now, this can be annoying, you have to remember that these people who are providing these live streams have to make money some way. So if you're just getting the free service, they need to make money in other ways. So advertising is the way that they make their money. But you can also pay. Now, this is kind of the reason why I moved over to Justin.tv. Justin.tv has a very affordable premium account membership fee. It's $80 per year, and that means that you get no ads. No ads on your live stream for $80 in the year. No ads. You get a few extra features as well for streaming. But you get no ads on your stream, and that's really nice. Because some people find that the ads can be a little bit annoying. And then with Ustream, it's more expensive. That's actually probably the biggest reason why I moved from Ustream to Justin.tv, was because I wanted to maybe possibly look at going down the ad-free route. I haven't done it yet, though. So Ustream, a little bit more expensive. And then BitGravity, which I was talking about, is an exclusive service. It's an ad-free exclusive service. So it doesn't have any ad-supported plans. Just completely ad-free. And it's a really kind of high-quality streaming service. It's a premium live streaming service. You see very big podcasters who would be making their living out of podcasting. They'd be using BitGravity because it's a lot more expensive. But it's a lot more premium. I'm just trying to think of an example of BitGravity and something else. It's like a pen, right? You could have like a really cheap pen, or you could have a really expensive pen if you're into writing a lot, you know. And BitGravity is like the expensive pen. And BitGravity provides a really great live streaming service. I wouldn't be able to avail of BitGravity live streaming quality, though, because my internet isn't the best, right? So I wouldn't be able to avail of that. But that pretty much ends the show for today. So I talked about on this show, I talked about how to live stream your audio. Just talked about that. Talked about compression, limiting, gating. And I also talked about how to run multiple instances of Skype on one computer, be it a Mac or a PC. And the next episode of Inside the Studio, there will be, I'll be talking about video. Up to now, for the first 5 episodes, I just talked about audio. In the next episode, I'll be talking about video basics, and probably the next 100 episodes, hopefully, if I ever make it that far, will be about video and audio. So I won't be cutting out the audio, talking about audio stuff, but I'll just be including video as well. Going through video basics for the first maybe the next 5 episodes will be video basics, and then it'll be kind of maybe a little bit of video, a little bit of audio, tips, tricks, all that kind of stuff. We'll be just talking about all stuff to do with podcasting, any podcasting news. But the next 5 episodes will basically be covered by, or I'll be covering video, just video, for the next 5 episodes, going through my video podcasting setup, the DIY podcasting setup I've got going, which is it's quite DIY, but I'll be going through that in the next episode. So there's a nice teaser there. So I want to thank everyone for watching or listening to this episode. Of course, you can watch it live 8 p.m. mostly 8 p.m. Every Tuesday. Could be a little bit later, a little bit earlier. You know, the best thing to do is to follow me on Twitter. Because you can see there on the lower third, at Talks About Tech on Twitter. I always tweet out when my shows are going to be on. Some weeks I do them a little bit later. Some weeks I do them a little bit earlier. Best thing is, just follow me on Twitter. I always tweet it out, and you'll figure out what time I go on the live stream. That's over at talksabouttech.com/live is when my live stream is on. You can go over there, and you'll be able to watch it. And you can also email me at michael@talksabouttech.com. That's michael@talksabouttech.com. If you have any questions about podcasting, please do feel free to email me. If you're thinking of setting up your own podcast and you need a bit of help, if you have a question that you might want me to read out on the show and answer, I will do that. Just email me, and I'll try to help you out the best I can. If you want to email me about anything at all, michael@talksabouttech.com is the email to use to contact me on. I'm constantly looking at my email, so I hopefully shouldn't be able to miss your emails. I read every email that I get on that email address. So That's the email to use if you want to contact me. So I just again want to thank you guys for watching or listening to this episode of Inside the Studio, and I'll see you next time.